Welcome to Let's Talk, brought to you live by the National Indigenous Radio Service, the only opportunity offered to the broader community to be informed on the issues and current affairs from a First Nations perspective. This is Chelsea Bond with Let's Talk.
Good morning. This is Let's Talk. It's a very special Let's Talk this Friday. We are talking about the results of the same-sex marriage vote that was announced this week. And so I have a very special guest in the studio, Seth Willey.
Woo! Hello.
Thank you for joining us. Now, we're going to get a bit about your story. I just want to, on behalf of both Seth and I, acknowledge the Turrbal and Yuggera people. And we want to acknowledge also the traditional owners of the land in which you're listening from around the country. So we're going to talk about the results. I'm going to talk about the campaign and where to from here. But first, we want to know a bit more about you, Seth. Tell us about who's your mob, where you come from.
Who my mob, where I come from.
Well, story.
I'm a Wiradjuri woman. My mother's from the Bulgandromai Mission, a Red Dust mob. So shout out to the Red Dust mob out there. Pete Gill, Dubbo. On my father's side, Vanuatu. My dad was born
represent.
On. Yeah, represent yeah. Vanuatu on MI Island. So, yeah, I've been living in Brisbane for 3 years now. So worked a bit in Sydney there for about 10 years in health. Got a health background. Also got some media background as well. Yeah, so I like a bit of YouTube stuff. I did some YouTube stuff and I like to do some voice acting and worked on a few short documentaries and then worked from there to get working into health. I'm two out of five people, children. Sorry, there's five of us. We're talking about the second child syndrome. So
you're the second child.
I'm the black sheep of the family.
Yeah, the black sheep.
I'm the black sheep of the family. Yeah. So my mum and dad. My mum's still on Nanama Mission there in Wellington, New South Wales. 7 km out of Wellington. My childhood was deadly. I was, my dad was in the army, so I was an army brat. We moved around the country every 2 to 3 years, so it was good to kind of see the country a bit.
Is that how come you come to do voices of having to perform?
Like, yeah, and observe people. Yeah, watch people. That was, putting my phone on silent here. So just meeting people and observing people and, you know, taking characters off. Mum would always say, Seth, go, whenever we get visitors and stuff like that, I'd get, go off in the room and get changed into costumes and clothing and stuff like that and entertain our visitors. Mum was like, go and do Uncle Such and Such down there. So I'd put on a show for a guest. Oh, it was tiring. I had to, like, you know, really try and make them laugh, have that good belly laugh. So, yeah.
Hey, kids, black kids got to work in the house,
eh? We had to work just for a feed. Yeah, that was fun, just, you know, observing and taking off aunties and uncles and, you know.
Is there a favourite auntie or uncle that used to take off that was, like, the family favourite?
My dear old grandmother, she's passed on now, but I got a character called Martha, and it was all just based around my grandmother. I used to sit there and watch her, even on the she'd stand there on the veranda and have a cuppa in one hand and a cigarette in the other, and she used to just rotate the weight of her feet on and she used to swing her hips. But one time I was filming her and I kind of sped it up and I put some music in the background, looked like she was dancing to it. So so I used to play around. I was a bit of a larrikin, you know, just mucking around with the family. I was the family clown. I think I still am in a way. Like, even in workplaces, always having a bit of a fun, having a bit of a laugh. That's always my kind of vibe, you know.
Yeah.
Making people smile and, you know, just make them feel good for the day with all the stuff that's happening in the world, but we're not going to get into that yet.
No, jeez. It is hard out there. So you're number two out of five.
Number two, yes, number two. So I'm not going to tell you my age, but yeah, I've got plenty of nieces and nephews running around. But listen, like, living in the army and then moving to Nanama Mission and then realising, you know, when I go on the mission that I didn't realise what country western music was all about until I moved to Nanama Mission. And
aye.
I was like, what's this kind of style music? And then, you know, yeah, that was an interesting kind of, you know, realization for me at that age. What's this music is all sad and gloom, but I don't want to talk totally bag about country music because this channel's all this station's all about country. I love my country music.
Who's your favorite country music artist?
Oh, I don't mind a bit of Alan Jackson. Mm. But my grandmother always used to listen to Randy Travis as well.
Yes.
Digging Up Bones, all that kind of stuff. And you know, good old Roger Knox.
Bless.
Oh, yeah, bless. And what's that, Lynn? Oh, I don't know.
Don't look at me.
I'm looking at
you.
Come on now, help me out.
At all, nothing.
I don't know. Winnetta, Lynette, I don't know. You know, the Bernadette.
I'm waiting for my mother or an auntie to text in and say, no, this is who, I don't know.
Yeah.
I'm a very bad Aborigine. I'm just not across
You don't know all
music.
Your artists? What's wrong
not
with you,
Not country
girl?
Music, no. I'm not a fan. I want to be uplifted and empowered.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm not feeling that with country music. Sometimes.
Yeah, you've got to be in the right headspace to kind of.
Or a bad headspace. Oh, I don't know.
Either way. You know, and sitting there listening to 4 to 5 minutes, you know? I don't know.
Now, music in your family, eh?
Yeah, we love it. My uncle's in a band called Brown Sugar and Pete Gill. Oh. So my mum was always a singer, and my baby sister, she's a singer-songwriter. So I wanted to make sure I got that right instead of singer-songwriter. So, but yeah, my baby sister, you know, she's a deadly performer. She does a lot of gigs in Sydney and does stuff at NAIDOC events. But
is she the baby of the family?
She's the baby. Oh,
I'm the baby.
I'm so proud of her, though. She makes me proud. I'm proud to be a big sister. So.
Oh, that's good. I'm 38 and I'm still referenced as the baby.
You'll always be
the
baby.
You go to a funeral and mum says, this is the baby. And they're like, aww.
I'm doing the rolling eyes.
Yeah.
Oh, mum, really?
Yeah, come on now.
Oh, my sport. Come on now. Yeah. So are we going to...
Do you want to... We want to play a bit of...
Evie J. This is my baby sister.
Tell us about this song and why we're going to play this song.
Oh,
what does this song mean to you? Apart from being about
the
your sister.
Song, yeah. It's called Lady Soldier. So it's dedicated for the women in our lives, in our family. We've always been surrounded by strong black women. Our resilience, our strength, our yarns, even in the kitchen cooking, you know, during, you know, family times, Christmas times, and just having that bond and also having that good belly laugh. And I think, you know, being a woman and being black and being proud, that's the thing that we kind of, you know, strive for across our community. And this song here, Lady Soldier, is pretty much based on all that stuff there with my baby sister, Evie J.
Hey.
Here I am all alone, standing tall, head right and I'm ready to roll. I'm not making excuses to live my life just the way you want. Cause tonight I already told you that I'm putting my best foot forward. Cause tonight I'ma stay here and live my life just the way I want to. Cause this life feels like it's taking your lady, I'm your lady, I'm your lady soldier.
is Chelsea Bonn with Let's Talk.
Good morning. If you've just joined us, we are talking live, me and my sister Seth. We are talking about this big Australian Idol moment this week. The results of the vote finally came in on same-sex marriage on Wednesday, was it?
It was Wednesday, yeah.
Now tell me, Seth, where were you? What were you doing? I was actually recording Let's Talk Live at the time the vote was being announced. So we had it on the TV here and so we had to just do a quick...
Yeah.
Okay, this is the... watch it as it rolled out. Where were you when the vote was announced?
It's a funny story. A sad story, but funny. But I actually missed the live announcement. missed it.
Oh, bless.
Running late. Blackfoot running late there. I was at work and I was hoping to be around people, be around my mob and be around my partner and everybody, but I was trying to find a TV. I was running around trying to find a TV at the workplace, and all the TVs didn't have an antenna to watch live. Oh. So then I had to run around and get a laptop to hook it up to a TV, and then bless, I only had one brother there from work, just sat there in the office, and we watched it. And it was bad streaming, so it was kind of delayed. It was like choppy, like that. And it was like, what did you say? So he was my interpreter. The brother who was watching with me was interpreting the thing. I missed the actual percentage and the yes votes and the no votes, kind of who, you know, what the outcome was. But I sat there and I was like, damn. So mixed bag of lollies. It was just sweet and sour moments. And then I was like, I was angry and I was happy. And then... yeah, I was mixed emotions.
What were you angry about? Because we saw lots of happiness on Wednesday, lots of celebrations. But what were you angry about?
Yeah, because I'm a...
You won.
Yeah. We won. Yeah. Hey. Today we celebrate, tomorrow we legislate. I had to say it.
See how black people are cynical all the time.
Well, it was really hard. But I, being a black woman too, you know, like that was a bit of a... That's the sour moment right there, because it hit the core. It's like... Oh, yeah, but then what Malcolm Turnbull was saying about, you know, it's a bit hypocritical, you know, like just...
Because what did he say? I didn't watch
Malcolm's having a fair response. Go. I don't know. I was like in and out because of the bad streaming. fair go. Oh, we are... Oh. Like all that stuff, you know, it was really...
I do find it challenging to hear white men in this country talking about fairness. Yeah. A bit hard to deal with.
Yeah, but that's the only part I watched. And then I was like, I was looking around. I was trying to embrace someone. There was only my brother boy right there. He was sitting next to me. And then I was like, can I hug you? Can I just give you some love? And he's like, yeah, bring it in. So, you know, that kind of thing. So it was really... It was a weird day for me. Like, I should be happy, but I was like very, I felt sad. And I was like, I wanted to be with my partner, you know, and she called me up and, did you hear about the results? I was like, no, I missed the baby girl. I missed it. She's like, oh, wow, I watched it. And, you know, then it was kind of all just that, you know, it's white people celebrating. Sorry, but I just said it. Yeah.
It did feel a bit of a white people's party.
Yeah.
I was watching it on live at the time and on stage. Mm-hmm. And you know, we saw Magda, which was fantastic, and Tony Abbott's sister. It was very much a white woman's party.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which, you know, good for them, but I wonder how black how do we blacken up that rainbow flag?
Oh, well...
Is it black enough?
Not black enough, but I know in America they add some colours to kind of blacken it up a bit, like the brown and the black. But
isn't it a big black fist in the middle of it?
Oh, we need that big black fist right smack bang in the middle. Right in the middle there. But I don't think there's a way to blacken the, you know...
Because were you waving the flag? Which flag were you waving on Wednesday?
But that's the thing, Chelsea. That's the thing. Like when someone gave me... like handed me a rainbow flag, and I kind of like, I kind of cringed a bit. I was like, oh, and I was quickly grab my Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander flag. I grabbed both of them and I was like, oh, like, I don't know. It was a moment for me holding that flag. And then, I don't know, it's all about flags, and it cuts deeper than that. It's a deep kind of, deeper thing. Oh, Seth, you're going deep. What's going on? It's too early for that.
Think about it though. I think, you know, I think it's people don't realize the complexity Or think about what it what intersectionality really means in terms of, it was interesting seeing the result, some of the commentary around the result, and there was a big thing about Western Sydney because apparently there was a high no vote in Western Sydney. And apparently it was because of all the migrants, in particular the Muslims.
Let's get the big finger out and start pointing now. Who are we going to? Yeah, we were pointing at the Muslim community.
Yeah.
Migrants.
And it was really made me wild. I mean, the ease in which on one day we can switch from being homophobic to Islamophobic was pretty impressive, white men.
Yeah.
but it was then time to then, you know, bash the non-white people for not being progressive enough, yet it clearly wasn't non-white people leading the Yes campaign in this country.
Yeah, exactly.
It seemed to be the white Christian lobby were kind of
That's championing. All I saw on the campaigns, and especially in the TV advertisements and stuff like that. You'd always see the, you know, the Christian lobbyists out there with the...
Peddling some lies.
Yeah.
Why are you always lying?
Hey. And so it was really, there was this really kind of interesting, interesting kind of analysis taking place, how quick some people were jumping to blame the migrants. And, of course, you know, Mark Latham comes out with an insightful commentary as usual,
as he does,
and he talks about that it was the Asian, Greek, Italian, and Arabic migrants in southwest Sydney that had shared the same concern that changing the Marriage Act did not sit well with their family, cultural, and religious traditions.
Mind you, what's the population percentage of those communities? You know,
and also, did the Yes campaign go out to Western Sydney?
I don't recall seeing the Yes campaign approach those communities, just by my memory, looking back at, you know, reflecting.
Yeah.
I've never seen, you know, with the Yes campaign approaching those communities. So it's a bit, I don't know.
Mm. So in your experience being here in Brisbane, I know you're involved in the Pride March here in Brisbane.
Yeah.
Do you think the Yes campaign went black enough?
Oh, well, it was, I'll straight up say no, even though it was a deadly, memorable moment for us mob leading the Pride March.
For our listeners, what's the Pride March and why does it exist? What's it for?
It's similar to Sydney Mardi Gras. Once a year we have a parade in September where we just, you know, walk with pride, head held high. It could be either turned into a rally, just standing up for our rights, just embracing, you know, same-sex love and the laws and things like that. So I guess it's a moment for, because there's Indigenous LGBTIQ community members out there as well, and we need to embrace and be proud to acknowledge our mob. And the Brisbane Pride March, it was the first time that we were able to lead the march, and that was a phenomenal, it was an amazing day. And we also got Casey Donovan there.
Oh,
she was there with us
and
she took my Aboriginal flag. Still waiting for that, Casey.
Hey, but, boomerang.
Boomerang, come on now. That was a good moment. But then we were only just told 2 weeks before the actual event was run. So we kind of left last minute. But, you know, for us mob, seeing the solidarity, seeing us, the amount of crowd that was there backing us and marching with us and kiwiing out and, you know, all this kind of, it was deadly and a bit emotional for some of us because, you know, pride means a lot to some of us LGBTIQ mob out there, brother, boys, sister, girls. So it was a deadly day.
Sorry to do a
please explain.
Pulling moment. For our listeners, we're doing some terminology here and I don't want to make this whole episode, tell me about your people. Because we don't like being the informants. Can we go back to the letters? And brother, boy, sister, girl.
Brother, boy, sister, girl. So brother, boy, born female, transitioned to male. And sister, girl is born male, transitioned to female.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander word for a transgender person.
And you were saying LGBTQI. So some people are familiar with LGBT.
Yeah.
Can you tell us the acronym?
The acronym.
And why you use particular terminology?
Yeah. Well, personally, I don't use acronym. Like, I identify as a gay woman. Black gay woman. So the L, lesbian, G, gay, B, bisexual, T, transgender, LGBTQ is queer, I is intersex. And there's, you can put plus because there's more letters on there, but I also, depending on where you're from, so depending on which part of, you know, the country you're from, some people like to acknowledge the Q as for queer and some people don't. So I personally like to add I and F to acknowledge intersex. And yeah, definitely. Is that all the acronyms? We covered all the acronyms? So something further?
And what do you say to people who say, look, I don't know the right words to use, the right terminology? What's your advice
around
being respectful in these conversations?
Yeah, you know, it's okay to ask a question. That way you're learning, and it's okay to be uncomfortable. Because that means in your gut you're saying, yeah, well, I want to learn, I want to know more, because you obviously don't know. So it's good to ask the questions. I'm happy. I'm sure everyone else out there in community is happy to answer the questions and be, you know, open and upfront and be straight up.
So long as the intention is, how do I be respectful to you, not how do I interrogate the legitimacy of your sexuality and your identity? Because they're two different questions, people are asking that question, gam, and saying, well, what's the terminology? But they're not, because they want to be respectful in how they refer to people. Sometimes people try to do it to...
It's about the tone. It's about the tone, isn't it? And how they kind of, what words they choose. Like, no derogative words. I know for me personally, queer... From my perspective, is I find it an insult. But some blackfellas out there like to use queer. I'm a queer blackfella. And some women. But for me, I use that because where I come from as well was used in a negative way. So, again, depends on you and what you feel comfortable with. But, yeah, as long as you're coming, having that approach, being from a respectful way, I think it's important.
And I wonder about the terminology that people can use who are a part of that identity and people who can't use it. So, you know, I use blackfellas all the time.
Yeah.
Not necessarily I'm always okay with whitefellas using blackfellas. It depends on the relationship and...
Yeah. I mean, that's just general. When you're meeting people, it depends on your comfortability, like whether you're okay with calling someone a brother boy or whatever, how they feel. And it's okay to ask the question. I know if you're unsure, for me personally, it's all right. Just ask me. I'll be straight up and upfront about, you know, about the... how to speak to me, that kind of thing. Yeah.
Well, look, I'm so glad that you've come in to have this yarn. And if you've just joined us, we're talking about the same-sex marriage results that were announced on Wednesday with my sister Seth.
Yeah.
And we're talking about where you feel you sit in terms of the movement, the campaign, as a black gay woman is how you identify.
Black gay woman, yes.
I'm not sure if I we're yarning about Wanda Sykes, and she's talked about...
Oh, she deadly.
about being black and gay and how hard it is.
Oh, it's tough, man. It's tough. Let's have a listen, Ella.
It's harder. It's harder being gay than it is being black. It is. Because there's some things that I had... There's some things that I had to do as gay that I didn't have to do as black. I didn't have to come out black. Sit my parents down and tell them about my blackness.
Blackness?
I didn't have to sit them down. Mom, Dad, I gotta tell y'all something. I hope you still love me. I'm just gonna say it. Mom, Dad, I'm black. Wait, what did she just say? Oh, Lord Jesus, she didn't say black, Lord. Did she say black? Mom, I'm black. Oh, no, Lord Jesus, that's black, Lord. Oh, that's black, Lord. Anything but black, Jesus. Give her cancer, Lord. Give her cancer. Anything but black, Lord. It's like, Mom, yeah, I'm black. That's just how it is. No, you know what? You've been hanging around black people. You've been hanging around black people, and they got you thinking you black. They twisted your mind. It's like, no, Mom, I'm black. That's just how it is. What did I do? What did I do? I knew I shouldn't have let you watch Soul Train. Was it Soul Train? No, Mom, it wasn't Soul Train, Mom. It's just who I am. I was just born black. Oh, you weren't born black. I don't want to hear that. Uh-uh, you weren't born black. The Bible says Adam and Eve, not Adam and Mary J. Blige.
Boom. Oh, bless. Oh, Adam and Eve, we've heard a lot about that lately.
Oh, gosh. Don't get me started. Charles,
no, go for it. This is the place to talk about
this. We're gonna say the H word. I mean the R. For those that know what the R is, it's the R, the letter R, religion. But I just find it the hardest part is trying to not get angry and not to reduce myself to the white man's way in terms of religion. And the fact that how short that history of religion is compared to our knowledge in this country as blackfellas. I just wanted to say that and absolutely. Let that simmer.
Hey.
Just chucking some garlic whenever you want, sister.
Bless. Look, it's been frustrating for me, having been raised in a Christian home and having family talk about during this campaign expressing, you know, they're not in support of same-sex marriage, and which they've attached to their that belief, to their religious beliefs. I find that difficult to. I don't accept that. Yeah. And so I find it really challenging because my understanding and my expression of my faith is not tied to homophobia. I just can't attach the two together.
Yeah.
So I find that really problematic.
Yeah.
And I find it hard to go to a church where the key leaders within that institution are encouraging people to vote no, and are misrepresenting the implication of that vote, and suggesting that their interpretation of their religious beliefs should be visited upon other people in this country.
Mm.
So I'm not asking them to accept the same beliefs that I hold, but I'm just rejecting their right to impose it and have it legally sanctioned in this country upon others.
Yeah.
And I don't understand why that's so hard to understand. Even at the very least, if they're going to cling to their ideas, what right do they have to impose that upon other people?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, for me, I knew nothing about religion. I still trying to learn about it. It wasn't until recently where I wanted to really research religion and the history of religion and where the ideas came from. And I just wanted to say this is given to me by my father-in-law, Lyndon Murphy. He's said to that we only learn that the ideas came with the boat.
Mm.
And that to me resonated with me. It's like that's true, like with religious context and the history of it. And so for me to understand that, and then because I was raised in a religious family like yourself, and I went to church and that kind of stuff.
Well, we didn't go consistently, but you know,
we only went in the Sunday school.
We weren't your model family, but it did influence my sense of social justice and various things,
It wasn't really a religious vote, though, was it? It was about, you know, equality with the right for people to vote. But they turned it and they kind of, with the Christian lobbyists out there and used it. Other ways to attack.
Yeah, that you know, legal rights somehow are going to harm their children.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing harming your children is your belief system, bless.
Yeah, and they were young mothers. They were young people that were involved. And that was really surprising. I'm like, hello, like,
you would expect some of these views, the outdated views to... Yeah. I mean, it's funny, though. There are some assumptions around this debate. I think there... you know, there were presumptions about who were likely to vote yes and who were likely to vote no. And some listeners will be surprised to know that Queensland beat New South Wales.
Oh, Sting, she had to go Queensland, there. She had to go
not
there.
Not the first time that Queensland has beat New South Wales in something. And I had some Koori mob were like, no, yous didn't beat us in the vote. Because they were thinking, you know, Queensland, the deep north.
yeah,
which it is. We're the home of One Nation and Joe Brockie-Peterson. So people sort of thought that the yes vote would be linked to things like class. And to other ideas. You know, we think that it's about, you know, older people are more conservative around some ideas. So we presume that, you know, most young people would vote yes, and most, you know, wealthy neighbourhoods would vote yes, and city spaces would vote yes. So there was all these kinds of, we attached our ideas about race and class and age to who's likely to vote yes. And
it was quite amazing too, seeing that ACT was up there and full of our favourite politicians, you know. They were like...
That's interesting.
I know, right? Like, they were like 74% yes. And I thought that was really surprising.
It was funny how people were really boasting about, like, their neighbourhood got the highest. It was like, you're cool if you got a high yes vote. I'm sorry, but Canberra not that cool, people. It's not that cool a place. They may have got a good yes vote, but it's pretty boring place to live, I reckon.
Yeah. So, I was, you heard of that.
And what was interesting in the news was... apparently, we have Tony Abbott to thank.
Of course. He was always behind the yes vote.
You cannot be serious.
Look, it wouldn't be the first time a white man's claimed credit for something he doesn't own or didn't do. So, but he, it's funny though, his change of tune. It seemed to coincide with his own electorate results.
Yeah. Surprisingly. So like 70-something percent as well.
What a surprise. So, 75% yes result in his own electorate. So suddenly he's claiming that this was his idea in the first place. He said that he put this process in place. And he says, I'll quote on 2GB radio yesterday, earlier this week, he said, "I have in a sense facilitated the change."
Oh,
Uncle Tony, knock it
Uncle
off.
He's so good, isn't he?
He is. But what's funny is that just days before the result, he was claiming that same-sex marriage would trash our country's history.
Oh, yes. Yeah.
Would trash our country. I'm sorry, but country's history has been trashed this. But, make you wild. I feel like we're doing Wild Black Woman show here.
I know. But even like the whole... hypocritical speech from Malcolm Turnbull. I don't know whether I talked about this already, but he really just the value for this country, fairness, equality before we go, that kind of thing. Like, come on, Malcolm, really? And then, you know, Bill Shorten thinking hard about everything he's going to say, and then he says that statement about, you know, today we celebrate, tomorrow we legislate. So he took all that. He had an opportunity to say something about even the aftercare of the LGBTI community that, you know, it's about the suffering and the pain that they've been through 2 months leading up to this actual result, and then just like, okay, it's done. And I was really surprised at how quickly this happened, being a black woman, the process.
Suddenly everyone got to get up and celebrate, but let's forget about the harm of this last little while and well beyond before the campaign started. Because this campaign, I mean, the vote may have happened, but homophobia doesn't go away now.
Yeah.
This is not a vote on whether that's going to end. And so I want to talk about the campaign and its impact upon the community. But we might go to a song first. We're going to cut to some Tracy Chapman.
Oh, just some Tracy Chapman. Yeah.
Talking about a revolution.
Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds... Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds like a whisper. While they're standing in the welfare lines, crying
the doorsteps of those armies of salvation. Wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution. It sounds,
yes sir.
Poor people gonna rise up and get their share. People gonna rise up and take what's theirs. Don't you know you better run, 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 run. Oh, I said you better run, 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 run. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about the revolution. Cause finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, while they're standing in the welfare lines, crying to those of those armies of salvation. Wasting time in the unemployment lines, sitting around waiting for a promotion. Don't you know, talking about a revolution sounds. And finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Yes, finally the tables are starting to turn. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution. Oh, no. Talking about a revolution.
Sometimes, if we're feeling low, negative thoughts and feelings can get stuck in a loop, dig their way in, and cause harm to our social and emotional health. If you're feeling like this, yarning is a good start to getting some relief and solving the issue. For some, confiding in someone is easier said than done. You might not want people knowing your business, or might feel shame, or that no one cares. It's important to know there are people ready to help. There are helplines open 24 hours with counsellors there to listen, and where you can remain anonymous. Try Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. Counsellors are also available online, where you can email or chat to them if writing's easier. Type Beyond Blue or Headspace into a search engine and check out their websites. Also, your local Aboriginal Medical Service can keep things private and give you support on your journey to healing, so you can keep staying strong.
A message from the Staying Strong Project, funded by the Australian Government Department of Health.
This is Chelsea Bond with Let's Talk.
This is Chelsea Bond, and I am joined in the studio with the deadly Seth Willie. And we are kind of deconstructing a little bit the results of the same-sex marriage, mm-hmm. and thinking about its impact upon the Indigenous LGBTQI community.
Yeah, well, for me, it was a bit of I was looking for it was a bit isolating for me personally. I was looking for kind of a safe space to go to and be around my partner and be around loved ones. I looked around. I only had that, like I said earlier in the story, that I was only had one mate there with me, and we kind of had a friendly embrace. And but yeah, it's all about safe spaces and ensuring that there was mob around you to say, you know, it's all right. Because for me, it was hard to process. Yeah, it took a lot. I spent half the day like just out of it. I was numb and really dumbfounded. I was like, what's happening? And the process was so fast. Like to have the 2 months to have all these campaigns happening, and then like boom, it just happened. Spending that money as well, knowing that there's programs, I want to get into programs and things out there that are just as important. But we, I don't know, for me, it was a bit of a, like I said, a sweet and sour moment. It was hard to swallow.
I'm curious about, for you as a black gay woman dealing with racism, sexism, homophobia,
yeah.
Where do you get the safe space though? How do you find safe spaces?
You do it within your own LGBTIQ community. I know here in Brisbane, I've got my network. There's a women's social support group called the Indigiles and the Gabunjalam Network. They really had my back and really, you know, just having those text messages or calls, sis, you're right, how you going, those kinds of conversations to just really make us, you know, to include us and to say it's going to be all right. You know, it's just, it doesn't end here. But knowing that those services are out there here in Brisbane, I know, and in Sydney and elsewhere around the country, there are similar social support. But having those kinds of connections and having, you know, those kinds of safe spaces to go, you know, you're okay to express yourself here. You're not going to be judged. Mm. We welcome you. We're here in open arms. And that kind of really, it got me through. And having those discussions with my partner and really having those raw, deep discussions to family and friends. I know for some of it there was hard to talk about, you know, to get family approval, whether they voted yes or no. So that was an issue as well for me personally. But, my partner was my support, and having those important conversations about the outcomes of this.
I saw a clip recently where Deborah Cheatham was talking about the campaign. We might just cut to her.
Yeah, let's play that.
This has been two of the hardest months, I think, that I have experienced in my adult life as a lesbian, to have been judged and spoken about. Certainly it's the second time in my life that I've had to go to the Australian people and ask them for a yes vote.
I can categorically say, as a gay man, that it has been painful. We have to ask our country for permission to be. I mean, that is crazy. Mm. That is crazy.
It's wrong, and it was unnecessary on every level. And I can't tell you the distress that it's caused to me. And I've been out there for a long time. I just can't tell you how distressing it has been to go through these conversations with people, and even to, you know, walk into my optometrist last week and overhear them talking about how they voted no. And do I walk out of that store then? Am I welcome there? You know, it has unleashed the hounds, and it was so unnecessary. And we don't actually know where this will end. It begins with the gay and lesbian and the transgender and the queer community. But where does it end when people think that they can take power into their own hands and have a say over somebody else's life in this way? We don't know how far that will unravel. And I think it has been reckless, this entire process.
That was... I wonder, and I think people understand that. When people, I've heard a lot of people talk about being afraid to, you know, there was that campaign around it's okay to say no as part of the no campaign, as if it was no voters that were the group that were being vilified in this country. Mm. And I found that really offensive. We know there's a really high suicide rate amongst LGBTQI community.
Yeah.
And for people who have legal protections around their relationships in this country, are claiming them and positioning their right to deny that to others as being a vilified group. Given the fact that this debate has been harmful, and that this is not just something that happens over a campaign. The harm that people experience during this time is harm that people have experienced since whenever they've identified.
Yes.
And will continue beyond.
Ongoing, yeah. It's all about that aftercare process, you know. Like you said, Chelsea, we are one of the most high-risk groups of suicide in this country.
Mm-hmm.
And I know the National LGBTI Health Alliance group, they've got some really deadly resources out there, and it's all about creating those safe places. And I know where I work at Brisbane Aches, they're creating an initiative, Safe and Deadly Places. Great. Which is something that I was really excited, you know, because especially being in an Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander organisation, leading something like that, because I used to work for a Two Spirits program, which has been defunded, and another painful experience, knowing all the high rates of HIV and STIs within our community as well, especially up north.
Yeah.
And what are we doing about it? You know, so there's this one issue here, and then it's like it's just the list goes on, you know, with
And apparently there's some leftover funding from this campaign, and there are people who have called for that funding to be...
Millions of dollars,
and it should be invested in services to support mob who have been affected by the harms of this debate. It makes sense.
Yeah.
It's the right thing to do. I mean, I still don't know why a vote was necessary.
Mm.
Is it just the politicians needed to check their electorates to see whether they'd stay in
That's
keep
right.
their seat?
There's always there's always a hidden agenda. There's always a distraction, isn't there? There's always some underlying.
I mean, when you see how quickly Abbott flipped the script his position, you go, "Oh, it was all about the electorate. This was just a popularity contest. It was to see whether it was popular enough for them to actually have the courage," I say it sarcastically because it shouldn't require courage, it's just the right thing to do, to vote, to make the change.
And also seeing the number of young people out there that have voted as well, I think that was an eye-opener, seeing that, you know, that they enrolled, not enrolled, but because it wasn't mandatory, it was all voluntary, and seeing the amount of young people from 18 to 20, just like boom, this is what we want in modern Australia.
But here in Queensland, we didn't want to get all that modern, so we oh, bless. So the Queensland opposition leader, Tim Nicholls, came out. Not that way. he came out to say some things, which he shouldn't have bothered. But he said that he was concerned about the bakers and the florists.
The bakers
and the florists, poor fellas. He said that he's concerned about them, and it should be up to them to decide who they want to provide services for, and that they shouldn't have to. I mean, I'm sorry, but then I was like, I'm hearing him talk, and I'm like, is he not familiar with the Anti-Discrimination Commission of Queensland?
It's going back to the 60s, man. It's like, what's going on? Like putting a sign up in the window. Sorry, no guys allowed.
I've gone to the website and it actually says if you were treated less favourably than someone else because of your sexuality, it may be discrimination.
Well, hello.
So as soon as we get this vote in, the Queensland opposition leader wants to defend the right to discriminate. Because it's an important human rights issue that bakers and florists should be able to discriminate.
Only the bakers and the florists.
Like,
I want to get those tiered cakes. Cake.
The Queensland Premier did come out and said that she firmly believed that the people across the state will embrace the nation's decision. And she said that she thinks people are going to be lining up to make cakes. And in fact, she says she's not the best cook, but she's happy to bake a cake if need be.
There we go.
From the Premier.
Wow.
So the Premier might bake a cake.
She's going to bake cakes for everyone now. There we go.
She reckoned, I'm incredibly proud that we live in a progressive, dynamic nation. But opposition leader, I don't know. You can't you're not supposed. It's legal. It's against the law to discriminate.
Fine. Also, like during this whole campaign, there was this piece out there saying you can get a $2,000 fine for being saying any homophobic word or being homophobic in general. So it's $2,000 fine.
Who's prosecuting this? Someone needs to start. Because there's plenty of it out there.
There we go.
I mean, how hopeful are you? Do you think it's the legislation's coming before Christmas? Do you think vote's going to mean a change or what?
I really don't know, Chelsea. I don't know.
Like, does it matter to you?
Yes and no. It's that. I'll keep saying it all day, sweet and sour, mate. I get angry. I'm so angry. But then I've got to try and I don't want to be like the white man and, you know, and have that anger towards everybody saying, oh, no, this is not.
I don't like white people.
Yeah.
They are angry.
I want to just send love and just educate. But, you know, if this goes ahead, then yay.
Yeah. For those who want to,
But not all LGBTI people voted yes. You know, there are some couples out there that nah, I don't want to, you know, that kind of thing.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Depends on, you know, depends on you as a person. But
I mean, voting yes doesn't mean you have to.
Doesn't mean you
it
have
just
to.
Means you're okay with other people being
pressure.
Able to.
As soon as it came out, I'll say, Seth, when are you going to propose to your woman? Nah, come on now, all on Facebook there. I'm going to get married.
You know, the whole lot of black fellas that are going to have nanas and aunties going, well, when are you going to get married?
I want my invite. Going to get that premier to bake your cake.
Auntie Anastasia gonna make
Auntie
a cake
Anastasia.
For
you. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. So I don't know. Like if it you know, it's good and it's bad. So yay or yeah. Yeah, that's me personally. So each to their own, but if it moves forward, I'm all about equality. I'm all about equality. But for me, for most, I always put my culture first.
Yeah.
My culture come first. So when I identify, I'm a black gay woman. So
hey.
I always say black first. I embrace my
First Nations.
Embrace my complexion.
Now we're almost out of time.
Oh, what?
I know, it's ridiculous. I'm gonna one more question before we go.
Okay.
For any mob out there that have got a loved one who identifies as being part of the LGBTQI community, what do you tell them that they need to do for their family during this time?
Just I guess. Oh gosh, gonna hit a nerve. I think it's important to just have an open mind and just support and love. I think the word unconditional love is it's important, but you can't say I love you, but
I'm not racist, but
so you say the but and you go, oh nah, okay. Well, I think it's important to just support each other, even ring up a mate and just be there. And it's not you know when someone goes, oh, are you okay, and then you're like, oh, those kinds of comments, but it's just like just having a yarn, just being close to family, and I'm close to my partner and having those conversations. So I think it's just important to just be surrounded by good people.
Thank you so much for your generosity of spirit and sharing and ending on family. We're going to go up with your little sister.
Oh, my little baby sister again.
Sweet sunshine.
Have a great day, you mob.
The air I breathe, I need you like the food my body needs. I need you like the clothes upon my back. I need you.
warmth on a summer's day. You're my sweet sunshine. You're my sweet sunshine. And you put that smile upon my face. You're my only happy place. You're my sweet sunshine. You're my sweet sunshine.